This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, daily YouTube videos, and I'm a longtime podcaster. Also, I have metastatic stage 4 prostate cancer that came out of remission in January. During the 2020 pandemic, my doctors advised me to stay at home, and the Life of Fitz podcast was born. 4 years later, I'm back in my cancer fight and continuing this podcast, calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I have met throughout my 35 years in this industry. And now I'm adding in some new friends to my call list. And of course, I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. Frankly, I'm shocked. It took me to the fourth season of the Life of Fitz podcast to get to Bill Snyder, probably the most monumental sports figure in Kansas history, maybe, and certainly the most monumental in my life. Outside of family and close friends, Bill Snyder impacted my life in a way that is hard to put into words. But I started PowerCat Illustrated with my wife, Becky, in 1998. It was the perfect time to do so, and it was all because of what Bill Snyder had built at Kansas State in terms of a football program in his first, 9 years. He arrived in 88, started in the season of 89. He went from the most humble beginnings, things that you can't even understand. You can't grasp now how bad Kansas State football was. There's no comparison to Kansas State football in terms of historic horrendous football. It wasn't easy. No, it wasn't. It took a lot of people. But Bill Snyder and John Wiefald were at the center of this. And in 98, they were going to potentially play for a national title. Well, that's how it impacted me. And here we are. My conversation with the legend himself, Bill Snyder. So now let's call Bill Snyder in Manhattan, Kansas. Hey, how are you doing, Coach?
Well, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm good.
I'm pleased to hear that.
Sitting outside with the dogs. It's in the morning and I'm still sweating. It's just ridiculous, this state. Why do we live in this state, Coach?
Oh, heaven. It's beautiful out. Come on.
So how have you been? What does Bill Snyder do on his daily rituals now post-coaching? I'm fascinated by this.
Well, it's nothing to be fascinated about, I can assure you. I am sitting in, I have a little office in the upper level of our home, and I'm sitting there looking at a stack of to-dos, which is covers probably about 400 sheets of paper.
So, how many of these are from Sharon?
Zero.
Wow. Is that another list?
It is things that I've accumulated over a period of time, and some of it I've put off, and some of it is just a normal happenstance. It is not quite 100 sheets, but that's an exaggeration.
Feels that way. First of all, thanks for the note. I continue to be amazed by your handwritten notes. For everyone listening, Coach sent me a note about my weight loss, which was very kind. How many of those do you do a day?
I don't know. there's no set, amount or number. It's just if I receive something that I think warrants a return, I send whatever it is, a note or otherwise. But, it's just a normal daily routine, I guess.
That's amazing.
And before we go any further, yeah. I want to ask a question. Mm-hmm. I had thought that I had sent you some information about a product called Afia Plus.
Yes, and I do have
did
it.
Did I do that?
Yep.
Okay.
I have actually bought it, and I take it. I've had some stomach issues related to my most recent radiation, so I've kind of try to find the right mix of. I take so many vitamins and supplements, and let alone mm-hmm. the medications that the chemo pills they have me on, which kind of shake me up. But anyhow, I kind of have to adjust my medicine to not want to throw up all day long. So, but I'm getting that behind me. It's taken me a number of weeks to. After my radiation treatments on my stomach area for the spread, it's taken me quite a while to try to get back to normal. And then I had three treatments on my throat, neck. Yeah. Now, you had throat cancer, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Did they make a mask for you that pinned you to the table?
I have that around here someplace, yes.
Oh, God. I take it that you're not claustrophobic, or it's not really claustrophobia I have. It's more like being trapped, which you are in that thing.
Well, I was trying to think about it. I didn't really want to be in that, and I assured him that I could, stay still for them, or, do whatever I needed to do. And so they, they let me do it without the mask, even though I have it. So
they fed me a lot of, pharmaceuticals to calm me down. I mean, I couldn't even get it made. I mean, as soon as it touched my face, I'm like, nope, I'm done. So, those three treatments were, out of all the stuff I've been through, those three treatments were the worst. I mean, because it just wasted a whole day, basically. But didn't you do it, weren't you doing some of your treatments during football season?
Uh-huh, I did.
Jeez. Yeah, I did that with my 18 treatments, but they were pelvic region, and they didn't mess me up at all. But I can't imagine. You were doing that, and... That's incredible. Believe me, I don't think I fully appreciated it at the time, but amazing. And you're clear, right?
It's been 5 years.
Yep.
So I don't know if you ever, totally step away from
the
possibility, but it has been 5 years since it all occurred. So far, knock on wood. Yeah,
I thought I was in the clear and came roaring back. And what's interesting is my spread to my lymphatic system wasn't related to my initial spread to my bladder. That's gone. The radiation took care of that. Mm-hmm. It took almost 5 years for microscopic spread to start showing up. And there it is. That's that. Yeah. I always tell people that cancer is truly the devil's work. It's... For example, prostate cancer, you turn off your testosterone. I'm on what's called hormone annihilation therapy, which is a lovely name. and so I'm producing no testosterone, and I'm on a second chemo pill because of prostate cancer figures out how to make testosterone defeat itself. It creates a an altered version of testosterone to feed itself, and this pill takes it out. But I mean, cancers can feed itself. My cancer doesn't need sugars or anything. It's incredible. Cancer's just, it's amazing.
It truly is. And it's, there's seemingly, you know, based on some of the things that I have been told and what the doctors, you know, explained to me that, you know, basically it's kind of no two cases are identical.
Yep.
You know, everything is just a little bit different and consequently needs, you know, sometimes a little different treatment. So,
yep, that's kind of where I'm at. Every step of the way, they got to get special approval because it's kind of out of the norm. And insurance companies and Medicare, Medicaid like to put you all in, you know, one line of treatment, and that's not how it works. So,
you win this battle.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of like I've got a lead now. I'm trying to run out the clock, and I'm hoping somewhere along the line they find the cure for this for all of us. But that's kind of the game. So, but you know, speaking of your habits of writing notes, I want to go back to when you were a young coach in the 60s. When did you start forming these daily habits? Because I sense that you never flipped a switch from, you know, you've admitted you weren't a great student at first. And at some point you had to build up these daily habits that you have that kind of became who Bill Snyder is. When did that process start?
Well, you know, from a process, it probably started when I was, you know, a very young child. I was only child of a divorced mother, and we lived in downtown St. Joseph, Missouri, on the second floor of an apartment house. One room, not one bedroom, just one room. And my mother worked 12 hours a day. So I was by myself, all the time. And so I somehow learned how to organize my time and did so by, you know, identifying a daily schedule and things that I needed to do or should do or wanted to do and things that I needed to do to help my mother. So it was, you know, it just goes back a long, long ways. And I've, you know, just always been that way, I think. And you know, it's been beneficial to me. Because I have, you know, I think beneficial, yes and no, perhaps. Maybe I put more on my plate than I should. But, you know, if I can write it down, then I fit it into a schedule and away we go. So I don't know if all that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. What do you remember about, I'm a person that doesn't carry a lot of memories from, you know, even 5 years ago, but certainly 20, 40 years ago. What do you remember of the first coaching job in the early 60s?
Well, the first true coaching job that I had, actually I was a swimming coach when I was a freshman in high school.
I love that.
And I coached at the local YMCA, and I coached at a local country club, and I coached at a community swim center, all in St. Joseph, Missouri. And I did that through high school, and then I actually coached the William Jewell College swim team. When I went there, they didn't have a swim team, and I encouraged one of the physical education people to start it, and she started the competitive program and asked me to help her coach, and so I did that. And then when I left William Jewell, I went to Gallatin, Missouri, a very small community in northwest Missouri. And excuse me. And I was at a high school. The school district itself K through 12 had 100 students in it, or not quite 100. So it was extremely small. But they did have a athletic program, and I coached football, basketball, you know, whatever they had. And so that was kind of the start of all of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's 1962. I was born in 64. This is going to be a strange question. As you progress through your life, do you look back at those times and marvel at how much the world has changed?
Well,
or is it kind of just technology's changed and we're all just kind of living in, we're the same?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, whether it's technology or the way of life, I think we've all changed. Or I would guess, I can only speak for myself. I think I have changed to a certain degree, but I think that, you know, as a lot of people would say, you know, many things do not change. Mm-hmm. You know, who you are probably is, you know, we'd like to think that we can change for the better, but you know, we still hold within us the whatever our past has brought to us. You know, it still exists. It was still there,
right.
And I don't, you know, I don't forget those things, or I try not to. I forget a lot of things, I guess, but I try not to, you know, forget my own personal history. You know, my life centered around my mother and my grandparents who raised me, and you know, the things that that took place from an early age, and I can relate back to them from time to time, and you know, and I'm glad I'm still at a point where I can recall, you know, those things, because they're great reminders for me from time to time. And brings back, you know, as I said, a lot of memories.
Yeah. I'm just absolutely amazed at how you just, well, first of all, every time I see you, you're still in a suit and tie. Coach, you can relax a little bit. and unfortunately, the last, I believe, two times we've seen each other have been at memorials or funerals. Mm-hmm. A lot of that going on. I mean, I was just reminded of Ernie's passing. Becky dropped by their house or their condo to, they had, you know, kind of an estate thing going. And she found on Ernie's desk the award PowerCat Illustrated back in 99, our very first year, gave him as Athletics Administrator of the Year. Uh-huh. And I thought, that's just so Ernie. He's had that on his desk for, you know, 25 years. It's incredible. Oh, yeah. I already miss him, and I hadn't seen him in a while, but what an incredible human being he was, and Jack Vanier was, and it's an amazing generation that changed K-State forever.
Well, you know, and Kansas State has been very fortunate because of people like that. You know, I think if it, you know, you mentioned Jack and his family, if it wasn't for Jack, none of it would have happened.
Right.
And Ernie was a disciple of Jack's, and he, you know, carried out Jack's wishes, and could do so. And he had a passion for it as well. And it was so meaningful for him. And Ernie could have been anywhere. He could have gone a lot of places, but he, you know, he chose to stay here and made Kansas State Athletics a, you know, a project, a lifelong project. Yep. For himself. And his wife, Bonnie, you know, Bonnie, you know, stayed in the background, but Bonnie was very, very meaningful in that respect. And she was very beneficial, and she's meant a lot to Kansas State University. Sometimes gets overlooked.
Absolutely.
But there was a couple of amazing people.
Absolutely. So you arrive in 88, and you look around And it's easy to assess. I mean, I was around then that there's a lot of things to do here. Now, I've known Jack and Donna. I knew them a very long time. I know their children, of course. And I mean, they're Brookville based. They were, and I grew up in Salina. And so I've known Jack, you know, most of my adult life, and he's very unassuming. Let's be blunt. When you meet Jack Vanier, you have no idea there's that level of wealth. Because
exactly.
He was such a humble, beautiful person, kind, but a horrible dresser. I mean, he was wearing his starter jacket well after it was out of fashion. When you first met Jack, what was that like? I mean, did you think this guy's got this kind of financial backing? You know, it's just he always amazed me. He was incredible. What did you think of him?
I loved him from the outset.
Absolutely.
He was truly a special individual. And when I first went to Kansas State University, I didn't know Jack. I knew very little at all about the family. Bob Krause was basically the one responsible for hiring me there. So I knew the family through Bob to begin with, but I got to know Jack, and he and Donna became dear friends. And he was just that amazing fellow, as you say. I don't ever remember Jack in anything other than a flannel shirt and an old pair of pants. Looked like he'd just come off of the farm, which is exactly what he had done. And he was, he was just, and he always wanted to help.
Yep.
And he came to me and asked if he could, what he could do to help. And I really didn't want anybody to have to, carry the burden. And there was a, in fact, there was a, Steve Miller was the athletic director at the time, and the program was in debt, and there was a need for we had needs, in our football program, and Steve would constantly have to explain to me that we didn't have the money and we couldn't do it. And so I told Steve, okay, I'll pay for it. I truly didn't have money. It was about $100,000. I didn't have it, but I told him I would pay for it, and I would have gone out and sought a loan of some sort, to do it, because I was just that invested in it. I knew, what was needed, or I thought I did. And that embarrassed Steve. And Steve said, okay, somehow, some way, we'll get this done. And he went to Jack Vanier, and Jack came to see me and said, what do you need? What do you want? We'll do it. Amazing. And that was kind of how the, from a financial standpoint, it all started. He and his family have been, as I said, we're just above and beyond that. They were dear friends.
Yeah, and
family like that.
When anything starts to grow, you kind of redo things, you rebuild buildings, and what became the Vanier Complex has been rebuilt many times. But as long as I'm alive, nobody's ever going to say, well, this donor just gave money, we're going to rename the building. No way. No, you're going to go through me on that one until my dying day.
True story. And somewhere there is a contract that says that.
Good.
I don't know where it is right now, but I made sure that was part of it.
That's spectacular. When you finally decided to come to K-State, you were in your late 40s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think so. Mm-hmm.
this that's the point in your life when you're like, I kind of like this offensive coordinator thing. So when you committed to do it, and the story of you taking the job is, it's just amazing. Because why? And everyone told you why. But you did just say, well, if I'm going to do this, it's everything. I'm putting everything into this, which everyone should, but you literally did, as you mentioned, with your financial commitment. That was, my wife would have beaten me to death at that point. That's how you had to approach it, right? If you were going to do Kansas State football, and I don't think any of the younger fans can appreciate how bad it was, you had to go all in, didn't you? There was no 99%ing this. It was 100% all in.
Well, true story. And it, and I had not, I'd been through the Iowa program, and the Iowa program, we'd been there for 10 years. And when Hayden took the position there, the program was in dire straits. But nothing compared to what Kansas State was like. And some of the things that, that I really didn't necessarily realize, those things that I didn't know about would not have altered my opinion, whatsoever, and my decision to come. But I do remember it. I mean, even Steve, as the athletic director, was embarrassed, when he invited me to come interview for the program, and I told him no. I wasn't sure how he got a hold of my name, but I think he had gone through, seeing what programs had advanced over the years. So he called me, and I didn't know Steve, and I said, I appreciate it, but I can't do that. I'm happy here at Iowa. And he called again and again, and I continued to say no. And one day in Iowa City, Iowa, he knocks on the door. I mean, the doorbell rang, and I opened the door, and there's a gentleman there that I have no clue who he is, and it's Steve Miller. And he had flown in and came and sat down, and he said, he asked me after he'd been there for about 10 minutes, he said, do you have a spare bedroom upstairs? And I said, why do you ask? And he said, because I'm not leaving here until you say yes, that you will come and visit our university. And so, I thought, well, that's, I like his, his approach. So I said, yes, I will do it. But I said, I am quite certain that I will not take the job. And he said, that's not what we're talking about. He said, we're just talking about you coming to visit. And so I did. And when I got on campus, there were, I asked Steve to show me around, and there were places he would not take me.
Smart.
he in the, where the football office was, he wouldn't take me over there. He wouldn't take me into the locker room. And he was just, embarrassed by it all. But, it was interesting. And what I appreciated at the time were all of the people. He had, and Steve's a great organizer, and he had put together, where the Legends Room is right now.
Yep.
He had invited people to come and to introduce to me, and that whole area was full. So there's 100 plus people in there. And there's, professors and instructors and coaches and people from the community, et cetera, et cetera. I can't remember all of them. And he wanted to introduce all of those. And John Wiefald wanted to wanted to visit, and so I visited with him, and I don't remember all the things that took place, but it was it was just a dynamic event, so to speak. And I told John, I said, I would like to go out on the campus. I'd like to have somebody take me out on the campus and just leave me. And John quizzed me back and forth, why do you want to do that, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, I just want to see the campus. And so they got a nice young lady that put me in an automobile and drove me on campus, let me off. And I said, I'll meet you right here in 1 hour. And I walked around the campus and stopped people and visited. That's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to visit with people that were on the campus. So most of them were students, but there were professors and visitors to the campus, employees of the campus, etc. And I would stop people, and I wouldn't tell them why I was there. And I would just ask about Kansas State University and the community of Manhattan and, just a variety of different questions. And after an hour, the young lady came back, picked me up, took me back to Vanier. Or not Vanier, but Bramlage. And indicated took me back to where the everybody had been gathering. And I went back, and everybody was still there. And I went to John Weefald and pulled him aside, and I said, I'm interested. And he said, what changed your mind? And I said, the people.
Yep.
And that was the essence of it all. I just, that time on campus, meeting all those people and just listening to them talk about the university, talk about, how they interacted as students, as faculty, as, people that had some connection with the university, was really impressive to me. So long story, but that's how it happened.
Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Absolutely incredible. And, I think as you look back, on it, anytime you're building an organization, whether it's a university, football program, or just a business, you kind of need the right people. They just got to be there. And you mentioned John Weefald and Steve Miller, and I think it was Jim Epps who found you in a media guide. That's how that led to the
exactly.
interview. Ernie, Frank Trace mixing in there, and Pat Bosco. There was just a convergence of goodness, of vision, and also of doers. It's easy to have a vision, but it's a lot more difficult to go do the damn thing. And you guys did the damn thing. It's It is one of the most remarkable stories in all of college athletics, and thank you for all K-Staters for doing it, because you literally changed – you didn't change a football program. You did, but that's not all you did. You changed the entire university and community and state, and coach it. You're a football coach, but so much more. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Very kind of you. But as I said, a lot of genuine, caring people that extends, throughout the university, alumni, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, just people that genuinely care and people that are so genuine. And I mean, that's one of the most impressive things to me is that genuine, caring people and loyal. You look at the people around you, and I stayed for a long time, but you look around and, there's tons of people. We're getting ready to go to an event for Amy Renz tonight.
Yep. Incredible person. Yep.
Amy stayed here 43 years. She could be any place in this country doing what she does. Yep. I mean, she is that good. And yet she stayed right here in Manhattan, Kansas.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't know this, but she's on my list of people to call for this podcast because, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, she's such a behind the scenes in some ways and out front in others, but humble person that
yes.
I think all of us tend to overlook her because she's not in the limelight all the time. But what she did was with the Alumni Association, again, was incredible.
Yeah, truly.
You mentioned Jack's generosity, and when I came to the conclusion in 1997, I was working for a jerk, and it was a small company and working for a jerk. Small company, huge compared to what I have now. But, I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this on my own. The Morrison family in Salina and the Veneer family were two of the first ones to step forward and say, yeah, I will invest in your business. And, I ended up with, I think, 9-10 investors total, which, in hindsight, didn't total much money, but it sure as heck got us rolling. And not one of those people have ever, including Jack, who certainly had the weight to do it, called me up and said, why'd you do this? Why don't you do this? Not one of those investors has done that. They just turned me loose and let me do it. And I mean, that I look back and what a blessing. And again, Jack helped me get going in 98, but 98 turned out to be a pretty good football season. I don't know if you remember that football season, but you had a pretty good team, so that really helped. But before I get into that, I want to back up and ask you a really strange question because there's a meaning to this. Have you seen the new movie Air about?
I haven't yet, but I hope to do so.
Everything you just talked about is also the story of Sonny Vaccaro and Nike and what he did in the 80s. It was an 80s soundtrack, so they had me right there. It's just filled with 80s music. But Nike was a distant third. It was a laughingstock. Nobody wanted to be there. It's an incredible story, but he went around like Steve Miller did and went directly, just showed up at their house. Sonny Vaccaro in North Carolina showed up at the Jordan's house, which was a bad thing. And the conversation you recounted reminded me so much of that conversation with Sonny Vaccaro and Michael Jordan's mother. It's wild. It was a fascinating time because we were coming out of, it was like technology was just hitting. There's a scene in the movie where he's got a rental car that has a phone in it. That's one of those huge old 80s phones. But yeah, it just brought back great memories. And I think you'd really enjoy it. It's a really, really good movie and reflects so much of what you built at Kansas State and what Nike became. It's incredible.
Well, I got to know the Nike owner way back.
Yep.
When they used to have a Nike trip. We were a Nike school.
Yep, I forgot about that.
Or became a Nike school, and they had these wonderful trips, and I got to know Phil quite well, and we'd communicate back and forth, and I loved the story, talking about, selling shoes out of the trunk of his car, and just amazing thing.
Yep, absolutely. And if people don't know this, Steve Miller, who hired you, mm-hmm. went on to work at Nike. So incredible.
They went from here to Nike, and had a great following there. I mean, Nike, Phil, and those people, they really enjoyed Steve. Yeah, appreciated him a great deal. And Steve's a very outgoing guy, so he kind of personality-wise fit in quite well.
Another incredible human being. You come to K-State, and this is another thing that when I talk to young K-State fans who don't recall those early teams and certainly, you know, what Chad May meant for the program. Mm-hmm. They're always fascinated or blown away, I guess is a better way, when I tell them, well, you know, Coach Snyder didn't come in with the quarterback run game necessarily. He was running essentially a spread with Chad May five wide playing in the the Big Eight. And it was essentially the spread, right? He just wasn't called that.
It was in a variety of different ways because we spread them out and we ran with, you know, two backs, one back and zero backs. And so much of it had been built up over the years. We did a little bit of that at Iowa, not a great deal of it. And it was all about personnel.
Right.
We just didn't, our personnel here fit those schemes, a lot better than probably anything else that we could have gotten into.
You weren't going to power running game through Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Colorado and all the good Big Eight teams. You weren't going to do that.
Well, we didn't have the people up front. We were playing with 185 pound offensive linemen. And, it was somewhat painful, and we only had 40. That's when you could have at that time. I think you could have 95 on scholarship. It had just come down from 100 and some, and we had 45 players on scholarship at the time. So we were less than 50% scholarship, at the time, and it was. And we didn't have very many more than that, in the program, period. So just, organizing practices was difficult, at the time. And it was, it was kind of amusing.
Yeah, it was a traumatic period. I mean, a lot of guys left in that first spring. And you had to do that. But you did it without the portal. You did it without, I guess I'm skipping ahead on my list here, but the transfer portal, NIL, let alone what happened with the pandemic. Do you feel fortunate you ducked out before all that? These are seismic changes in college football.
Well, it's frightening to me. I think they'll get through it. They know the answer right now. It's just, if the NCAA will step up and put themselves in a position where, they have to fight some battles. The lawsuits will be imminent, when they try to make some changes. But nevertheless, it's my concern about it as much as anything is the value system that it impacts, with young people.
Yep.
We've always tried to, and I would like to think that it's still, a prominent value is loyalty and commitment are significant, and it, destroys those concepts. I mean, it tells you it's okay not to be loyal. It's okay not to make a commitment. You come to Kansas State University or University X, Y, or Z, and you don't like the food on the table, so you get on the bus and go to another school immediately.
Yep.
And everybody says, hey, it's okay. But, you know, in all reality, it goes against a value system that I think is significant. And that is that one of commitment and loyalty.
Yeah. And things aren't easy. You run into stuff all the time in your life that if you choose to quit, that's a way to deal with it. But if you, you know, cliche, but if you're the buffalo and decide to walk into the storm to get through it, that's a hard lesson to learn. And I feel like we're telling a lot of people nowadays, you don't need that. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just go do something else. Change whatever.
Exactly.
You're fine. And you're right. And there's huge ramifications if that becomes part of society. So you were running that spread. I don't know how I steered off into that. But you're running the spread-ish type. Matt Miller comes in and layers in a little bit more running game. Another guy. God, that's one of those memorial services we saw each other at. Then you see Michael Bishop. People wanted him to come as a safety, but you wanted him as a quarterback. What can you tell me about your first inkling when you saw the film of Mike and what he was at Blinn Junior College and what you thought he could be at this level?
Well, it was very easy. You didn't have to watch very, very long. I mean, he was really a talented athlete. I thought it would be, you know, extremely difficult to get Michael to Kansas State. And I was excited, you know, to learn that, you know, everyone wanted him. He was a quarterback where he was, and everybody wanted him as a some wanted him as a receiver. Most of them wanted him as a defensive back, you know, because he had good speed, and he was physical and he was talented. But he was ideal for what we wanted at Kansas State University. I mean, he was a perfect fit. And that's the reason Michael came here, because we gave him the opportunity to be in the position that he wanted to be in, to play at quarterback. And other schools were not, initially weren't willing to do that. You know, then a lot of schools changed when they realized and told him that he could play quarterback. And, I think he trusted the honesty of our program and our commitment to him in that respect. So it worked out great.
Yeah, needless to say. And he finally got into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, yeah.
And you fought for that, didn't you?
It was a hard process. Most certainly did. And he was taken back by not ever getting in. And he'd been nominated several times, and when he and I talked about it, he had been nominated. You have to wait 2 years between nominations, and I had nominated him the previous year, and so I couldn't nominate him the year that he had asked me about it, and so the next year it was renominated again, and that was the time that they accepted him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's called the Wildcat for a reason, and you can point to Michael Bishop.
Exactly.
That's the Wildcat right there. That's the dude.
True story.
There's a couple moments in my career that are connected to what you did at Kansas State. I had left the traditional newspaper business in 1995 to start a magazine for the Wichita Eagle. And I'm sitting in Cincinnati, Ohio, Nippert Stadium, which is now a Big 12 stadium starting this fall, watching your team stink it up at Cincinnati and win on the last second play, Miller to Lockett. I'll never forget it, because I'm sitting at that game. What have I done to my career? Why am I – this is going to be bad. And then they win. And the other one I remember so well is, again, sitting in a road press box, this one at Northern Illinois, And Michael Bishop takes the ball down the sideline, and I'm like, oh, this is different. This is something I haven't seen with Kansas State football in my entire life. Those are two just such firm memories in my head. But also with the Cincinnati game, you had just won. And I don't remember many games where you were more angry when the media came to talk to you after a game than that one. You were so disappointed and just mad about how your team had played for most of that game and found a way to win, but that wasn't important. And that's when I knew you were different. It wasn't about the wins and losses as much about how are we getting, what are we doing? How are we taking care of our business? Yeah. And because they didn't. They won, but they didn't really take care of their business, did they?
No, that's so true. You know, when that, which takes me back to the very first day that I was here as a head coach, very first time that I met with our players, and I told you there was, you know, it was there were twice as many seats that I had set up as there were players, and so, but I took, and it was at the complex, and I, the old one, and I had the players go out on the field with me. And I had someone, I don't remember who at the time, turn on the scoreboard and scoreboard lights, different than the one they have, we have now. And I told the players, I said, I want you to look at the scoreboard. And I want you to understand that what happens on that scoreboard is not of interest to me. What's significant to me is, and then I went on to explain, you know, how they lived their lives, how they played the game, you know, how they took care of each other, and in a variety of different just intrinsic values that were important. And I really didn't want them to have to feel the pressure of having to win. And it was, you know, it was just my approach to it was a little different. And the reason was because I knew, in all honesty, I knew they weren't.
Yeah.
You know, we, you know, you, everybody says we're going to win, we're going to win, we're going to win. But, you know, it's a feeling that you have to have that positive attitude. My attitude was positive, but I was realistic in understanding that, no, it was going to take a little while. And all I wanted to do was get better. And that's what I told them on the field, that I just want you to be better tomorrow when you're out here. Then you are right now. And then the following day, I want you to be better in all aspects of your life and certainly on the football field. And that's how you'll be judged, not by what the scoreboard says.
Yeah, it really did take that. I mean, just keep grinding and grinding. And, you know, a couple things that you have always said that always stick with me, just get a little bit better. Just every day, just keep going forward. And that's so significant for everyone and everything they do. But also, I always have loved the quote, your description of Kansas State football, that it, you know, didn't rise out of the sand like Las Vegas. It you know, you start off with 1-10 and the miraculous one victory and how it took place. Mm-hmm. Very similar to Cincinnati, just shorter pass, but kind of same concept. Then you go 5-6 in 1990, and I remember thinking that was the most incredible thing after what we'd been through for a stretch of time at Kansas State. I'm working in Salina, Kansas, at the Journal there, and you know, I had been on campus in 82 when they went to the first bowl game, but then it dropped off, and it was just pure misery. Then 7-4 in 91, but you couldn't qualify for a bowl. They turned down the waiver. It's so stupid. But anyhow, 92, you go 5-6. And I'm telling you, Coach, I think in most circumstances, in the current environment of impatient administrators and fans, you would have been fired at most schools after going 7-4 and 5-6, despite where you started.
Right.
But it took 5 years, 9-2-1, and off you went. And still there was a building process in there that when you just stare at the records, it's just absolutely incredible what transpired. But it took a long time to honestly tear down the structure and rebuild it. And I don't think most coaches would survive that process now, either on their own, just that can't do this anymore, or the administration says, look, this ain't working, and move on. They were patient with you, weren't they?
Well, you know, they were. And I think, like I said, I think Bob Krause, you know, had an awful lot to do with that. You know, just and I think part of it was because of, you know, he was as responsible as anybody for me being here. And so I think he felt some responsibility, you know, for it as well. But he, you know, he fought the battle with us, and I always appreciated Bob for that. But it, you know, Kansas State was not in a position to fire. I mean, they hadn't won 5 games in 30 years.
Yep.
And so it was, you know, realistically, in any way, it was, it made no sense to, you know, to pull the plug.
Absolutely.
You know, already. And plus the fact that they couldn't afford anybody else.
Well, yeah, it, you know, eventually the program, you do get into your corner, and you hire a guy, and you finally say, when you see any hope, that's the guy. And honestly, that's happening at Kansas right now. I'm a big fan of Lance Leipold. I see, you know, it's a different time. Again, fans don't appreciate Kansas football, despite the issues they've had over the past umpteen years, is in better shape than Kansas State was in 88, just light years ahead. But Lance has that same thing. He's running an offense that makes his team, you know, adapts to his deficiencies by turning them into strengths. And now Sean's gone to work for them, which, you know, is amazing, because he's now working at Kansas State, but he gets to stay close to home. But I got to ask you, the first time you saw your son in that Jayhawk polo, that had to be jarring, because it was jarring for me. It was like, what?
Well, you know, it's Sean had to have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, and people there have treated him extremely well.
They're good people over there.
But it was, you know, there were no options, let me put it that way. But they have, as I said, they have treated him so well, and I think he's doing well there. And Sean's a very highly successful, you know, special teams coordinator, and he's not on the field there yet. But you know, as soon as they have the space, and there's the NC2A is supposed to. No, I take that back. The NC2A apparently in the past few days has passed a rule where you can have an additional coach on the field.
Really?
And so Sean now is on the field, if I've got that correct. So, but he's they've treated him well, and he's awful good at what he does. You know, you look around and see. I mean, after all, it was NC2A Special Teams Coordinator of the Year a couple of times, and Conference Special Teams Coach of the Year several times. And, you know, he's just awful good at what he does.
Yep. Their special teams will be better. There's no doubt about it. And I'm a fan of Lance Leipold, and that might make K-State fans like, what? No, I just think he's a really good coach, and he does it the right way.
Well, that's and he does, and he's a good person. You know, I haven't gotten to know him very well, But from what I know up to this point in time and with dialogue I have had with him, he seems like a nice man.
One final question before I let you go. Shortly after retiring, our mutual friend D. Scott Fritchin wrote a book summing up, you know, your career. It was your right. How do I put this? You gave him the information. You read from your personal diary, which is remarkable. And Fritch did an incredible job with the book. How important was that, to have that book written by D. Scott?
Well, it was not really. In fact, I told Scott no several times. So I, you know, appreciated, but really didn't want to. But he was pretty persistent, and it was I did it because of him, you know, because he's just a good person, and I enjoyed him a great deal. And it was an easy process, you know. We just sat down and talked, and he did, you know, he put it all together, and. Like I say, I don't know how significant it is, but you know, it has had an impact on, you know, I receive a lot of notes and correspondence about it, and it has had, you know, I think a positive impact on a number of people, and anything you can do to help others, that's a good thing. So.
Yeah,
but Scott's good. Scott's a good man.
Yep, he certainly is, and he's a brilliant writer. And that book is so important that it's now in the library, so to speak. It's in the realm that people can go read it and understand what everything. And now I got to get Fritch to write a book about the entire building process. And that, again, is from watching Air. I'm like, this is so much like what Kansas State did. It's incredible. So, well, Coach, I've taken enough of your time. I appreciate it so much. I love you. I appreciate your support through the years. And I'm glad you haven't taken to building birdhouses or golfing.
Well, no, I have three sets of golf clubs.
Colbert.
And and they're packed away in the garage.
Yep.
So I, about 2 months ago or so, I took one bag out and I set it by the front door to remind me that I needed to go play. And then about 2 weeks ago, I took it back into the garage and put it with the others. So.
Don't fall for it, Coach. It's a cult. Don't do it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Coach.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it, Fitz. You take good care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
I'm going to be really honest here. I thought I would take about 40 minutes of Coach Snyder's time, and I thought that was a lot to ask. But when an hour started to approach, I thought, I got to stop this. We could go for hours, which would have been great for me personally, but not great for a podcast. Coach is a man in his 80s, and he still is so clear of thought, still has his sense of humor, and is just a wonderful person. I personally have been blessed by his presence in my life, but I think we all realize that everyone associated with Kansas State University was blessed by his arrival in the state of Kansas in the late 1980s. He changed the entire trajectory of this community and university. Amazing. And he's still going strong, even in retirement. He seems to be at peace with retirement, which honestly surprises me. Man, remember, please get your PSA checked. Don't be like our friend Matt Miller that didn't see it coming because he was too young for a PSA score and dead before 50. I miss Matt. I love Matt. Do it for Matt. Go get that PSA scored. Thanks, folks. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.